All right, so before I introduce our next speaker, she has up until 8:10 to speak. Right around 8:10 is your cutoff, somewhere around in that area. So let's give her a warm welcome, Felina from Orkin. Huh?
Right? Felina alcoholic. Right? I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get to share from a podium. And, you know, I don't have to do this on Zoom, you know. But there are people, I mean, Zoom is saving people right now, you know. And I do as little as possible on Zoom. I get out to 4 meetings a week right now. 3, 4, I don't know now. But I'm here, you know, and I was thinking about it today. I get to go and share my experience, strength, and hope in person, you know, and be among my people. And this is the stuff that helped me stay sober. Meetings like this, you know, if I had to do Zoom, I don't know. I don't know if I could do it that way, you know. So if you guys are hitting Zoom meetings, great. I want to welcome the new person in the room. I hope you find something that keeps you coming back. If not here, Zoom. There are lots of meetings on Zoom, you know, and you can take bits and pieces of it. You know, if it helps you stay sober for that moment, let it. All right. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Like I said, my name is Felina, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, guys. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and Amber shared something about feelings. And I never reacted normally to situations as a child. There's a story in the big book, Freedom from Bondage, and the first lines of it, she says, I never reacted normally, or the mental twist that led up to my drinking happened way before I took that first drink. And I remember reading those words when I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went, oh my gosh, that is me. And I can remember my mother telling me that I was too emotional as a child. I wanted too much from her. I just wanted someone to love me, and she couldn't give me that because both my parents are alcoholics. And one of them is still practicing alcoholism. That is my father. He's 80-something years old, and he still drinks. And my mother, I'll share a little bit of that because that's part of why I'm here. She had me when she was 19 years old, and she never wanted to be a mother, but she didn't believe in abortion, so she had me. And she used to tell me that my father tricked her into getting pregnant. I mean, I don't know how you trick somebody into getting pregnant. This isn't a penis, you know? But that's her story, and she's sticking to it. I don't know. My childhood, let me tell you. But she had me anyway. And they say, I've heard, she did the best she could with what she had. I beg to differ. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But she had me, you know. I didn't ask to be born, and she had me. When I was 2, we were in a house fire, and I got burnt on my arm, my face, and both my legs. And my mother, She ran into a burning building to save me. And a third of her body got scarred. And all I heard my whole life was, I am the reason why she is burned. Because she ran into that burning building to save me. And when I was old enough to argue back, I said, I didn't ask you to save me. And, you know, I got vengeful and spiteful in there after a while of hearing the negativity from a woman who I just wanted to love me. And at two, also, a group of her friends decided it would be a great idea to watch a child trip on some acid and see how she react. Luckily, I had another family member there who was my aunt who watched to make sure I was okay. Now, I didn't know that, you know, growing up, I found that out in my adult life, that that was just part of my childhood. I think I went to 5 different kindergartens when I was, I think you're 5 when you go into kindergarten, something like that. We moved, and I didn't know it was called a geographical at the time. I just know my mom moved, and because of her alcoholism, she'd pick up and leave because she created so much wreckage. Well, I went to kindergarten in Santa Rosa, Arizona. She was institutionalized in Oregon. Then we ended up in San Francisco and then back in San Diego. So I'd get in a month of school and then move, and then in 2 months somewhere and move. And they thought my mom was just straight up crazy there for a while, and she got institutionalized. But in this book, it talks about sometimes we have to go to sanitariums because that's what they did back then. So she ended up in a sanitarium twice, and I just thought she was crazy, you know. I didn't know it was alcoholism at that point, you know, but I watched my mom drink. Alcohol was the answer to all my mom's problems. She got into a relationship, she drank. She got abused, she drank. She got a job, she drank. She lost a job, she drank. She had a child, she drank. She got burned, she drank. And so for me, it was what I learned. And I never wanted to be an alcoholic, never. I was that child that if I went to my friends' houses, I would be the best child that they had ever seen because I wanted to be there and not go back to my house. I was a great escape artist, and by that I mean I escaped from my reality. I still do it today. You know, I still do it today. I will hide out in situations. But when I was a kid, I hid out at my friend's house. I remember coming home one time, and my mother and her boyfriend are blasting rock and roll music at, I don't know, noon, something like that, and they're popping caps in the front yard to the music, singing some obnoxious, you know, rude things at the highest decibel on the stereo. And here comes smiley little me down the road, and they're like, oh God, here she goes again. You know, I have to go back into that house. And I don't know how I did it, but I did. I can remember bailing both my parents out of jail on the night of one of my dad's birthdays. Once again, the cops were called because of the loudness of the party that was going on. There was a live band in the garage and loud music and naked people all over the place. And the cops showed up at the house. Somebody had fallen into the birthday cake in the bedroom, and I was hiding in my room, you know, locked in there. And my mom started snorting at the police. because they're pigs. She did that and would sing a piggy song to them, as she called it. And so she ended up in the back of the car, and my dad proceeded to turn the hose on and hose the police officers down. So he ended up in the back of the police car. And what does a little girl do at, I think I was 8, somewhere in there. This was a regularity in my life. And I had a tank top that my mom had got me from the local bail bondsman. Dave Bratton Bales Bondsman. I think he's still around. And I had his number memorized because it was on the front of my my shirt that, you know, an 8-year-old used to wear to school. And I called him and he was like, you know, Felina, this is the first time that I've had to bail out someone's parents on the same night, you know, and but I'm going to do it for you. You know, my mom had him on retainer. It was such a frequent thing. And again, I swore I was never, ever going to be like that. I hated alcohol. I never wanted to touch it. Whenever my mom or somebody would drink and they thought it would be funny, you know, some of the things that they did and call me names. You know, I was a prude. I wasn't her daughter. I didn't behave the way she wanted me to behave. And I just loved her anyway. And my dad, like I said, he was an alcoholic too. He was one of those that they got divorced when I was 6 months old, and he was always crashed out on our floor or working, doing something for my mom or something. She allowed him to be in the picture because he was my father, but he was never my dad. Like he wasn't there for anything. He would just show up at certain times. And there's a, what is it, Cats in the Cradle, that song? That used to be my song to my dad. And 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover was my song for my mom, because that's how my mom was. Every time I turned around, she had a new one. And she taught me that I didn't need a man. I could do anything a man could do. You know, I could change my own tire, I could, whatever it was, anyway. I was a little warped growing up, let's just say. So that when I became a teenager, I kind of rebelled a little bit. And but I was also an athlete. I was training for the Olympics, of all things. And again, I would escape out on the ice because I didn't have to deal with my home life. And my mom decided she didn't want to be a parent anymore when I was 12. She figured she had done enough. She had blown through quite a bit of money, wrecked cars, owned bars, totaled cars. 1 year she had 55 arrests for indecent exposure, drunk in public, a bunch of stuff. And at the end of it, it escalated where I was left home alone with a friend, and somebody tried to, they had been watching the house and tried to climb through the window and wanted a party with me and two of my girlfriends who were there. And we were 12. And I picked up the phone and I called the cops. And he's like, I know nobody's home, just let me in. And I told my girlfriends to go hide in the closet, call the cops. And I had a baseball bat behind the door. And I said, if you come anywhere in this house, I'm gonna crack you in the nuts. And you better leave now because I've called the cops. And they're like, no. But the cop showed up just as he was trying to come in the back window. And the cop's at the front door and he goes, okay, can you let me in? And I said, how do I know it's you? He said, look out the window. There's a cop car. And I was like, And I'm standing behind the door like this with a baseball bat. And he opens the door and he goes, "Man, you are prepared, aren't you?" And I go, "Uh-huh." And he goes, "Where's your mom?" And I said, "Not here." And he said, "Where's your mom?" I said, "I'm not telling you." He said, "Where's your mom?" I said, "At the bar." And he had to call my mom, and my mom was too drunk to come home to see what had happened to her daughter. And shortly after that, a phone call was made to my dad, and she said, "I'm done. You know, I want to go live in the mountains and paint. I don't want to do this anymore." She's ungrateful, and it's your turn. And my dad had to be a parent for the first time in, well, 12 years. And he took me to San Ynez, of all places, same town I was born in, and enrolled me in school. And my father did not know how to raise a 12-year-old little girl. We lived in a converted school bus with no running water. And he used to sneak me into the local trailer park so that I could take a shower. And that was going to be my life. But this sweet young girl who was a year older than me in school took one look at me the first day, and she said, "Come on, you're going home with me." And she took me home to meet her mom. She couldn't remember my name. We walked in the door, and she said, "Mom, this is, what's your name?" And her mom went, "Oh God, not another stray." They pretty much adopted me, you know, and to this day, they still call me one of their daughters. I love those people. They were loving parents for me. They showed me what a loving relationship looked like, because I never saw that. I didn't know what that was, let alone did I know how to do something like that. So, like I said, relationships were warped for me. All I knew growing up is that I wanted to be a mother someday, not like my mother. And that was my only goal that I had, was I wanted to be a mom and I wanted to be married. And so at the ripe old age of 13, I took my first drink. My mom was coming into town, because after a month of giving me to my father, she decided she wanted me back. And she showed up there at my school and tried to kidnap me. And needless to say, I got shit-faced drunk and had my first blackout at 13 years old. And I'd like to tell you that was my only blackout, but that's not my story. I can't tell you how many blackouts I've had. And I drank a lot for a lot of years, from 13 until I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 33 this time. And I had 3 DUIs, 3 minor possessions before those DUIs. And I didn't think I had an alcohol problem. I thought I had a cop problem. I could stop drinking anytime I wanted. I just didn't want to. And, you know, I lived in a small town. That's why I thought I had a cop problem. But, where is it? Think. I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous with more than just a thinking problem. The other stuff had sped up my drinking this time. You know, I say this time because I came to Alcoholics Anonymous as a child with my parent, or with my mother, and she didn't stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous worked. I had heard about it. I went to Alateen as a kid, and I would hear, like, the slogans keep coming back, one day at a time. So when I got here and I saw those, it was things that I could relate to from my childhood. I didn't know it at the time because I was so messed up when I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I weighed 86 pounds. My arms were bruised from the tips of my fingers all the way up because I was doing other things so that I could keep drinking. And actually, it wasn't so I could keep drinking. It was because I wanted to die, because I didn't like the life that I was living at that time. I didn't like where my life had gotten. You know, I was in an abused relationship, drugs, alcohol, and I woke up one morning and looked at myself in the mirror and thought, I don't want my kids feeling about me the way I felt about my mother. And there was a knock at the door, and it was the police, and they were there for him, not for me. And the words I said in the police report, I still remember. They read it back to me when I went to court, and it was, thank God it's over. And I can't tell you how important that is to me today. Because I grew up with a God in my life, and I turned my back on God. Between the abuse and the neglect and all the other things that, the emotions that I went through as a child and the feelings I felt, I had buried them so deep inside me that I didn't think I would ever come out of that. And I was ready to go with the drugs and the drinking. I just didn't know how to do it, you know. I wasn't the suicidal person, but I was slowly committing suicide, and I did want to die. I just didn't know how to do it. You know, I wasn't a take my life type of person anyway. I was a take your life type of person. And but my God had other plans for me. And my God wanted me to have a happy life. And I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous this time. You know, I had to go a couple times when I got my DUIs, and I didn't stop drinking. And one of those times I ended up in a Prop 36 alcohol class. It wasn't Prop actually then. It was Central Coast Headway. Prop 36 came after that. But I ended up in Central Coast Headway for the third DUI. I went for the first, completed that. They didn't tell me to stop drinking. Got another one. Again, they still didn't tell me to stop drinking. They just said it's an awareness class. We're going to teach you how to drink and not get caught. That's what I heard. And you just can't drink during the class. Again, that's what I heard. And but that third time I was there, and I walked in, and I was doing some of those other enhancers, and I gacked out of my gore. And another member of Alcoholics Anonymous was in my class with me, and he's in this room tonight. And he walked up to me, and he said, he had given me his card, and it wasn't for me. He happened to know him at the time. And he said, if he ever wants to go to a meeting, and we had a good joke at that afterwards, you know, it was like, yeah, like he's ever going to call. Let's have another one at that, you know. And but this man watched me bounce in and out of that classroom, tell some of my stories, you know, one of my drinking stories from a work party, closing it down, still drinking and driving from Santa Maria to Los Alamos, closing down a bar at 2 a.m, going home with the bar owner, who was one of my good friends, and her boyfriend, who came up with the bright idea to include me into a threesome. And halfway through it, Felina woke up out of her blackout and drove home half naked from Santa Maria, or from Los Alamos to Santa Maria. I don't remember the drive home. The car was parked backwards behind the house. There was still a beer in the car. I woke up that morning to the phone ringing, is how I ended up going to work, still drunk from the night before. Had to go through 8 hours of work and then go to my alcohol class. And they asked me my worst night of drinking. At that point in time, I could say it was last night. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you that was the last time I drank, because it wasn't. I kept going. Until I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to get sober here soon. And, but, you know, I had a long drinking career. I did. And it wasn't always bad. You know, I had some good times drinking. I did. And then I didn't. And then, like I said, I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous right after my 33rd birthday. And I was here because the voices in my head told me, go to Alcoholics Anonymous, make it look like you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And then you can keep go back and do the things you want to do. And so I was halfway in and halfway out. I came in the door. I heard wah, 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 keep coming back, wah, 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 bye-bye. And I'd leave. And then I'd go to the bar or the hotel and tell my friends I found Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're like, you're not an alcoholic. And I'm like, you're right, you know. And but then I'd come back in here again the next time. And this happened for quite a few next times. I raised my hand quite a few times. I read the steps off the wall. I had sponsors picked out, but that 500-pound phone, I was not going to pick it up and call them and say, hey, you know, what do I do in this situation? I didn't know that's what you do until I had that one last drink that wasn't the last drink. And I finally got a sponsor, and someone got me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I still have my first big book. Bob Heim bought me, most of you guys don't even know him, got me my first big book, and I have, just like this, I have names written in it, and all but one of those names that are written in my big book are no longer with us. That's just the reality of Alcoholics Anonymous, sad but true. And they could not or would not see our way of life, most of them. One did, she died sober. Two of them died sober. Both of them were my sponsors. I did finally get a sponsor who guided me lovingly through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm one of those that grow at the speed of pain. Suzanne knows. Suzanne was my sponsor. She was also my counselor. And I say it all the time, she's one of the reasons why I'm standing in this room. I did not want to be an alcoholic. And I didn't want to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want to be told what to do. I don't like being told what to do unless I'm naked. True story. True story. God. I love Alcoholics Anonymous today. It's giving me a new way to live. This big book tells you what to do in the morning, what to do at night, how it works, and there is a solution. Can it be as simple as that? Yes, it can. It also tells you at the top of page 112 to read this book. Page 69, kid you not, talks about sex.
Yeah.
Again, true story. Amber said it, I say it. Alcoholics Anonymous is one of the best things that ever happened to me. You know, almost done. I came in here in 2003. Hopefully, that was my last drink, December 3rd, 2003. I came in here, and my sponsor, like I said, she guided me lovingly through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she told me something. She said, don't get into a relationship in your first year of sobriety. Like I said, I don't like being told what to do, so I did it. And got my heart broken in Alcoholics Anonymous. And now, for an alcoholic like me, when I get my heart broken, I normally drink. But because I had done the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't drink. Now, my God, I got into that relationship in Alcoholics Anonymous, and let me just say I've come full circle. I got into a relationship with someone who was going through a divorce, and you know, when someone's going through a divorce and they've been there for a while, what does somebody who has actually done the work do? Well, they try and make it work, right? I mean, I know that's what I would do. I would try and go back. So he did. And I had to deal with that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm just saying something that I went through. But I wanted to be there so bad that up here and in here, I stayed there. You know, I didn't allow people to get to know me because of what I wanted. I know what I want, and that's what I wanted. I'm stubborn, and my God knows what I want too. So here it is, 16 years later, and things happened. You know, I got into a relationship, and it ended after 2 years. And the way things worked out, the person from 16 years ago happened to be not in a relationship at the time, and full circle, I am back in a relationship with the person who I fell in love with 16 years ago in Alcoholics Anonymous. And crazy. You know, God knows what I want even when I want to fight it and lie to myself, you know. Like I said, I'm a great escaper. For years, I escaped in Alcoholics Anonymous and outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hid out in the other fellowship because at 10 years of sobriety, I wanted to drink. Not because of him, but because of the situation. I was, you know, there was another, anyway, not there. At one point in time, I prayed that this bitch would get drunk and a different bitch got drunk. And then I was close with that bitch. I'm sorry, I say bitch. I got to get real close with other women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I swore I would never get close to women in Alcoholics Anonymous because I know what you're capable of. You know, how do I know? Because I'm capable of it too. And, you know, one of my favorite meetings that I go today is the women's meeting on Saturday morning. And it's my new home group. And I have genuine relationships with women today who don't want to sleep with me, some of us are sicker than others. Today I was checking out Jessica's ass, let me tell you. I was like, damn, girl, those jeans. No. True story. Stand up, Jess. Just kidding. Let's all check her out at the end of the meeting. She's a friend. I can say that today. She actually helped me. I'll say this and shut up. Okay. She helped me put a pin right here so that I was not blasting you guys with my chest. You know, right? Darn it. That's the old me would have. The old me would have. Suzanne told me when she first met me 17 years ago, you can't come in here looking like that. You need to put on some clothes. I would sit out in front of the Alana Club in my bathing suit top and short shorts. I was focusing on my tan. You were in my sun. Stay the hell away from me. I wasn't here to get sober. True story. You know, some of us are sicker than others. I am one of those. I love Alcoholics Anonymous today. I love the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they have saved my life. And they've given me a life today that I don't want to let go of, you know, and I want more of it. So thank you for letting me share. Woo-hoo!
and it was getting good. Let's give it up for Felina one more time.